Welcome to Econoday's Economist Roundtable. I am Ann Picker, Econoday's Chief Economist. With me are Mark Pender and Jeremy Hawkins. Mark covers the U.S. while Jeremy covers Europe. I'd like to begin with a little discussion about the Bank of Japan. Even though the meeting, their monetary policy meeting, is not for another 2 weeks, actually it's the same days as the Fed, its policies are in focus in the markets. At its July meeting, the BOJ announced that it would review why its aggressive easing has failed to boost inflation when it meets at its next meeting, which is September 20th and 21st. And on Monday, Bank of Japan Governor Kuroda took aim at critics, arguing that BOJ's monetary easing has hit a wall. Kuroda pointed to three exogenous factors that have hampered the BOJ from achieving its 2% inflation thus far: a series of declines in crude oil prices since mid-2014, sluggish consumption following a sales tax hike in April 14, and a slowdown in emerging economies since mid-2015. He asserted that the bank still has ample room to maneuver in all three dimensions of its monetary policy, that is, quantitative easing, qualitative easing, and interest rates. Importantly, the governor did not deny that the bank might employ measures outside this framework, saying that other new ideas should not be off the table. Options are rumored to include pledging to keep monetary conditions loose for a prolonged period or buying foreign government debt. He also said that any move towards less accommodation would not be considered. He acknowledged that BOJ's negative interest rate policy may impair financial intermediation and hurt public confidence in the banking system, a sign that the bank, central bank, is finally becoming more mindful of the rising costs of its stimulus. Under the current framework that combines negative interest rates and along with hefty buying of government bonds, some riskier assets, the BOJ has gobbled up about a third of Japan's bond market, a staggering number, and faces criticism from banks for squeezing already thin profit margins. Most analysts expect the BOJ to ease further when it meets in 2 weeks, with economic growth having ground to a halt and inflation sliding ever further away from its 2% target. Jeremy?
And a couple of questions, if I can. One, do you think they can actually achieve this 2% target in anything like the foreseeable future? And two, do you think there's at least an outside possibility that if they can't reach 2%, then perhaps they'll simply come out and cut the target inflation rate itself down to, let's say, 1%?
No, actually, the change in the inflation rate that's being discussed, at least outside the BOJ at any rate, is a range of 1% to 3% rather than an outright cut to a lower inflation rate.
Okay, so that's interesting. They're giving themselves more scope both on the upside
right,
as well as on the downside.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense. And what's your own personal sense about whether or not they're actually going to meet this 2% target in the first place?
It seems ever further away.
I'll take that.
In my
no.
mind, I, you know, it seems a target devoutly to wish to be achieved, but nothing's happening.
When was the last time there was any measurable inflation in Japan?
There was a brief period of inflation around the sales tax, when the sales tax was increase, which showed a momentary increase. But gee, it's been at least a year and a half, I think.
Is it that? Why don't they consider further fiscal policies or the government end to try to raise inflation? I mean, they could raise, you know, impose wage increases or something like that. Is that a part of their discussion?
Well, you know, fiscal policy in Japan is interesting because originally it was expected that both monetary policy and fiscal policy would work together and be joined at the hip, so to speak. Fiscal policy, however, has faltered, and whatever there has been very little that has been insignificant in its impact.
How much of it is a constraint, do you think, you know, from the fiscal side, just in terms of looking at, you know, the debt figures out there, because, you know, debt to GDP ratios are through the roof. Is that acting as a constraint?
If it is, it's not talked about. It's more talked about in terms of, well, let's get the economy growing at a reasonable rate, and all that will take care of itself.
Another question, Ann, and that's on the birth rate in Japan and their immigration policy. If you have a declining population, that could have inflationary...
You have a declining, very much aging population, both.
Do they seek immigrants at all?
And that is not helping. What?
Are they looking for immigrants at all? Or?
Well, it's just... The aging population has made it more difficult. As a matter of fact, they have gone to some extent to try to get older workers back into the labor force so that they don't have a problem with insufficient workers.
It's interesting. The same sort of issue we see in a large chunk of Europe, really. And UK is not too bad, but certainly countries like Germany, and they actually really need an influx of immigrants just to maintain, you know, a labor force which is capable of sustaining even current growth rates over the longer term.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Jeremy?
Okay. Over here, then, well, of course, it's a lot of central bank meetings taking place over the course of the next few weeks. Well, we got certainly Europe, we got Sweden, ECB, Swiss National Bank, Bank of England, and indeed the Norges Bank, all announcing policy statements over the course of the next couple of weeks or so. Big one for the financial markets this week, inevitably, will be the ECB. And it does seem to be a bit of a split in terms of what people are looking for this time. I think if we go back just after the Brexit vote, most analysts were pretty well convinced that the fallout from Brexit would hit the European economy and force the ECB to come out and cut interest rates, possibly in September or at least by the end of this year. Now I think there's this sense that, well, looking at the numbers, by and large, Eurozone growth appears to have held up relatively well. It's certainly not accelerating, but by and large, it's kind of doing okay in a very doldrum-y sort of way. So the bank's got scope perhaps to keep its powder dry if it wants to this week and wait for later on. Personally, I think they probably will hold off this week. But for what it's worth, there are some discussions about your possible changes they could make. I think the one which should have the most significant impact would be a significant increase in the asset purchase target, which is 80 billion euros a month at the moment. I think that would be difficult to get through at this stage, but nonetheless, there is some talk about that. More likely possibility, and it's good without getting too much into the technical side of things, there's also a possibility of changing the eligibility criteria. So this refers to those assets that the ECB and the national European central banks can actually purchase. And essentially, they're almost running out of these assets at the moment because the way it's structured, they can't buy assets yielding less than the minus 0.4% deposit rate. And because we've still seen yields drifting lower, more and more of those assets simply can't be purchased by the ECB anymore. So we may possibly see some move on that front. Or indeed, a real outside call, I suppose, would be a cut in deposit rate itself. But at any rate, we'll be going into this meeting then with a split market. There'll be some certainly disappointment if Mr. Draghi doesn't hold out the promise of some sort of move by the back end of this year, and certainly some disappointment perhaps indeed if we don't see any kind of concrete action taking place. So it's going to be quite an interesting one, I think, as far as the central bank watchers are concerned this week.
Jeremy, how much do you think that the BOE moved preemptively a little too early, given the data? And do you really trust the data other than a bungee jump?
I must say, Mark Carney and his friends at the Bank of England are taking something of a hammering at the moment from the pro-Brexit guys who are saying, look, you came out before Brexit and suggested if a nation was to vote to pull out of the European Union, the economy was going to fall down some kind of black hole. And in actual fact, if you look at the numbers, by and large, it appears to be holding up quite well. I think, though, as you say, it's important to put Brexit in context. And, you know, financial markets expect everything and everything now. And by that, I mean they're looking at the latest numbers, and we still have very little of the post-Brexit world to look at. Survey evidence has been quite mixed, although certainly not as bad as it might have been. The hard numbers, well, we had good July retail sales, but some other figures which haven't been quite so great. But certainly nothing's been as bad as people anticipated. But the big issue, I think, is that, you know, around the time of the Brexit vote, you're inevitably going to get some kind of knee-jerk reaction, which will almost certainly overshoot, and then it comes back a little bit. The real question over Brexit will only be answered over the longer term. And that really comes down to how investors and consumers are going to react once the clear picture of how we leave the European Union emerges. And on that front at the moment, we really don't know. But I think what we can say is that we've got the Bank of England meeting, what, coming up on the 22nd. Chances are, because the figures over here have held up quite well, people expecting another monetary ease then will probably be disappointed, because it looks like things are going to be on hold for the time being.
Jeremy, are there any anecdotal reports or commentaries, company commentaries, of isolated or early effects from Brexit, or companies coming out, UK companies coming out and saying anything in their statements or anything?
Yeah, it's been quite mixed. We've had some small companies making noises to the effect that, well, look, you know, we're not too happy with this, and we may be forced to move our headquarters out of the UK and into Paris or Frankfurt or certainly some part of Europe. But I think in terms of, you know, the big players at the moment, you know, they're making noises, well, we may have to move out. But A, they don't want to, unless they have to. And B, of course, you know, they've got to be sensible about it, because we don't know what shape Brexit is going to take yet.
Are we talking legally?
Not so much legally, just in terms of, you know, okay, so we're going to be out, in theory at least, we're going to be outside the European Union in 2 years' time. Okay, so we know that, unless something happens to prevent it coming about. What we don't know is what is going to be the UK's trading relationship with the European Union. You know, will we end up negotiating some kind of special deal, or will we completely be out of the single market in totality, which would definitely, I think, encourage some of the big players here to move out. But, you know, we don't know what shape that's going to take yet. So, you know, for the financial markets, in particularly for London, you know, it can be vital that it has direct access into the European financial market. If we cannot negotiate that as a result of these ongoing talks, then you're going to start to see some of the big banks moving out of London and probably going to Frankfurt and Paris. But this stage, really, it's just too early to say.
Mark, you want to say a word or two about the Fed?
Sure. Well, we had a bit of a disappointing employment report on Friday, 151,000 payroll growth, down sharply from the prior 2 months, but still very respectable and enough to absorb newcomers into the market. But there were weak aspects to the report, including a decline in the work week and a decline in wage pressures. This is in contrast to the prior week, when Yellen at Jackson Hole was sounding very hawkish, saying that the economy was strengthening and that the arguments for a rate hike were strengthening. But the jobs report isn't pointing to any urgency for that. And when they announce their decision in December 21st, I think, it's not going to be, the odds right now aren't looking that they're going to be taking any action. And the meeting that follows that is in early November, which immediately precedes the election. Unless there is a giant burst of economic strength, they are very unlikely to make a move immediately before the election. So that leaves December, their December meeting, as the one that most people are expecting if they do raise rates and if the economy does continue to strengthen. And it's hard to say. We had an ISM report on the non-manufacturing sector this morning, which was a way low, an outlier, almost the recovery low, which is kind of outside the norm right now for the U.S. data, although we had weak vehicle sales too at least compared to July, August retail sales. Vehicle sales came in soft. So right now the economy here is looking okay, and the labor market is still strong, and there's layoffs are very low, but it's not enough to spark a rate hike. But the U.S. is so much in contrast to our prior discussion on Japan and Europe, where weakness is really the subtext, and here it's not. It's marginally accelerating strength, I think.
So, Mark, do you think the vote will be split this month? Some people actually go for it?
Sure. That's a very strong possibility. We have Kansas City's George, who was in the last meeting, wanted an immediate rate hike. And you might get some hawks coming in. And interesting that Yellen after Jackson Hole really showed a hawkish side, and there was some discussion that she may be leading the discussion for a rate hike, which was a bit of a change. She'd always been more of on the dovish end. So you could see a break. That would be an interesting detail if you do get a 2-8 vote or something like that. And it is possible. And that would raise expectations then for a December rate hike. But the hawks are having trouble right now because inflation data isn't accelerating. It's not moving up. It's stuck. The PCE core is just stuck at 1.6%, and it hasn't been going anywhere. And the Fed has attributed it to the prior relationship to the dollar and to imports, but it's not really. These effects in oil, but these effects are pretty well stable right now, and so there's really no smoking gun for the hawks to really to get going on. But there is just you want to have a tough Federal Reserve that is guarding the economy, and an occasional rate hike is a way to signal that.
Thanks, everybody. See you next week.